Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Hi, Boomer and Geo coming to you live. The Bill Ford Tough Studio on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. So you're starting to see some more names that are being contacted by the Jets for their general manager position. Of course, they're going to deal with that first before the coach. And we had talked about John Robinson of the formerly of the Tennessee Titans, who had that team, you know, in a position to compete. But then all of a sudden things fell apart quickly when he traded A.J. Brown to the Philadelphia Eagles. And he was fired soon after that, after I believe it was a game where A.J. either came back to Tennessee or the Titans were playing the Eagles and Philadelphia and A.J. Brown went off. And it was like that night John Robinson ended up getting fired. But a couple other names, Lewis Riddick, who has been attached to a lot of jobs, a ESPN employee who has worked in front offices, and he was calling a game last night, actually. He was a part of that broadcast for the Falcons and Raiders game. And Thomas Dimitroff, who was with the Falcons for many years and was the general manager for the team that went to the Super Bowl and then blew that lead against the New England Patriots. And unfortunately, that's going to follow him around and Dan Quinn around when you're trying to describe their careers.
Yeah, but you know what? They were really successful there. They, you know, they got Matt Ryan.
Yeah, he drafted Matt Ryan. Yeah,
and when you draft a quality NFL quarterback that is a game-changing quarterback, you can build the team around him, and that's what Dimitroff did.
Yeah. And
they had a good coaching staff, too, under him.
Yeah, that, I think that at first they had Mike Smith there, and then they ended up going with Dan Quinn after that. And
Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, he was. Yep. So
he knew what he was doing. He knows what he's doing. He's a quality NFL executive, is what how I would describe him. I wouldn't say personality plus. No, but I don't necessarily know that you need personality plus at that position because you know they're not guys that are out there. You know. Looking for in other words, GM doesn't have to be personality.
No,
he just has to know the right coach to hire if he's involved in that process.
Absolutely, and not be afraid to hire someone who's got a little bit of gravitas, and as opposed to going for some coach that you could control in some way, who's it's his first time job or first time head coach or whatever it may be. Al believes that Thomas Dimitroff can work in New York because of his look. That's what he said this morning on the warm up show, that he's got a cool old guy look, and because of that, he thinks he'll be able to slide right in to New York here and have success.
Yeah, older guy, still looks cool. Like late 50s, but kind of cool looking. And nice hair, full head of hair, very important for a GM.
Glasses, fashionable glasses and frames.
Nice fitting suit. Like
yes.
He looks good in a suit. It's not like big and bulky on him.
That is true. Nicely tailored suit, in shape. So that's what Al looks for in a general manager, someone who looks cool enough.
So the initial press conference with him would go over well, you believe?
Yeah, oh, 100%.
I actually agree with that because the Jets need people who look like they know what they're doing right off the bat. Now, it doesn't really mean anything in the long run, but I mean, if you, we reference it probably too much, but the Adam Gase press conference was the biggest Jets thing of all time. I mean, it just was. And you had Christopher Johnson out there extolling the virtues of Adam Gase, and then Adam Gase up there bugging out, having some sort of reaction to whatever was going on.
It looked like an Adderall thing for me.
Yeah, you know, or
that's,
something.
That's usually what that is all about.
Ooh, tacos.
Yeah, I mean, that was so strange. But anyway, so he's a guy that I you could do worse than hiring him. Now, I mean, I'm still worried about the coach more than I am the general manager, to be honest with you. But
right, he was the director of college scouting at the beginning of the whole Brady Belichick thing for New England.
All right, so that's how he ended up getting hired, because he was plucked off of that deal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, most of those guys that were in that front office at that time, Nick Caserio's one of those, running the Houston Texans now. They all ended up getting jobs. Scott Pioli ended up getting a job. You know, they all end up somewhere, going somewhere else and being the man. Didn't always work out, but for Dimitroff, at least it did work out initially with the Falcons.
Yeah, I'd like to go through his first round draft picks. Dimitroff, see how long he was there, and see how he did. Because, I mean, that stuff, obviously, in the scouting and that stuff matters. Matters in a big way.
Well, he was with the Falcons for 11 years as their general manager. That's a long run.
Yeah. There is a website that will take you through every single one of his draft picks over 11 years with pictures and commentary. I mean, that's just crazy.
Yeah, he was actually a part of the first two Super Bowls with the Patriots.
Oh, okay. So he's seen some winning?
Yeah, definitely.
He's seen some Patriots.
He's been around. Look, if you come off of that staff, you're around football. You are football. You eat, sleep, and drink football. That's what that staff was.
Now, when was he done there?
In Atlanta? 2020.
All right, so he has not gotten a sniff in 4 years?
No, he has not. Who knows? Who knows why? It could be, you know, you never know.
Too slick looking for certain places.
Well, he also maybe wanted to take a couple years off, too. Who knows?
Nah, these guys don't want to take a couple years off. These guys want to get back in. You tell me this all the time. It's their life. It's ball. They don't want to take a couple years off.
And this guy is that. I will say that. He is that. There's no question about it. And he obviously wants back in, and there'll be opportunities for him to go back in. You know, the interesting thing for the Jets will be, are they going to hire a tandem situation like the Giants did?
Tandem?
Or are they going to hire the GM, bring him in, give him, you know, the press conference and everything else, and then select the coach?
So did this group that they put together, the 33rd team, were they selected just to identify general manager candidates or also coach candidates?
I would think probably both.
Yeah.
And I would think that they're working off of a list that the NFL puts together for them to make sure that, you know, if there are certain guys out there that are not getting a look, that they realize that these are people that you have to interview.
It's a process.
Yeah, it is a process. And they have to go through all the minority candidates that the NFL has on the list.
That is correct. Now, I mean, I think that the right way to do things is to identify that general manager, hire that general manager.
I'm with you.
And then have that general manager pick the coach.
Be a part of that process, yes.
But I mean, I don't need 50 other guys if I'm the GM helping pick out the coach. Like, if I'm the GM and I'm the guy running the show here, you let me pick the coach. I don't need Mike Tannenbaum and whoever else, Rick Spielman and Woody Johnson be a part of this. You hired me to do the job. I was afraid to come here because of the stuff I was reading and what you were doing to Joe Douglas. So first things first, if I come in here, you hire me, I'm hiring the coach.
So you say that, you're not getting hired. So thanks. I mean, there are some things that you have to, if you really want the job, and obviously you don't interview unless you really want the job. I mean, you got to be forceful in how confident you are in yourself, for sure, but you also have to be mindful of what you're trying to do and trying to get the job, and there may be certain things that we don't see on the outside that on the inside you have to accept.
Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, if they're going to operate things where I'm not going to have control and then the owner is going to be all in my business and doing things and overriding me, then I don't want the job.
I'm with you. I'm old school in the fact that I want the general manager to hire the coach, or at least be a part of the process of hiring that coach, because those personalities have got to work.
The process.
They got to work together, man. And, you know, when you start losing, you know, the animal instincts of the man come to the forefront, and everybody is basically stabbing each other in the back, and it's his fault, it's their fault, he didn't get me the players, he couldn't coach the players, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The insecurities are just incredible. Well,
that's a chicken or the egg thing. I mean, the reason why the insecurities are that way is because that's the way the business is.
I know. I mean, and that's, you know, look, they're getting really well paid, and when they do end up getting fired, they end up getting, you know, keeping their contracts.
Yeah.
But I would like to have that GM in place and have him hire the coach to make sure that he and the coach, you know, obviously know each other, they respect each other, and somehow they can get through it. I mean, say what you want about Shane and Dable. They know each other. I don't see a rift in it at all. I see, even behind the scenes when we saw, you know,
Hard Knocks.
Yeah, you saw at least a working relationship where they genuinely like each other and they look like they were working together.
Yeah, they do. I mean, in any time that we've been around them, same thing. I mean, even when we did that game, the Eagles game, for Compass Media Networks. I was on the Giants sideline before the game, and those guys were talking to each other like they were best friends. You know, I mean, it's just they work well together as far as relationship-wise. Well, now, the results have been terrible.
But I know, but if they stay here, it's going to be because of that relationship. It's going to be because they're solid and not because they're, you know, throwing each other under the bus to the owner.
An alliance that they have together.
I hope that's the case. I really do.
Yeah, I'd be curious to find out, like, through your NFL insider contacts that you have, why Thomas Dimitroff has not gotten a job in the last 4 years. And has he interviewed a lot? Like, this was a guy who, as you mentioned, was there for 11 years in Atlanta. They had a lot of success. Drafted well. If you think Matt Ryan's going to go to the Hall of Fame, but drafted a guy who was an MVP at the very least.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, he should have gotten a look somewhere else. There's got to be something going on.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
And if he's interviewing for the Jets, that means that he wants to get back in.
I mean, there could be all sorts of things. There could be personal issues. There could be anything. Maybe he was going through something. You never know.
Yeah, I know. That's why I would like to know, because it would be, on paper, you could do a hell of a lot worse. Like, if the Jets hired him, I wouldn't have as much criticism as for other guys. I would say, like, this guy knows what he's doing. I mean, feel like he knows what he's doing.
His dad was I'm reading right now. I don't know how accurate all this is, but his dad was a football coach with the Ottawa Rough Riders.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, why would you make
Tiger
that
Cats,
up, you know?
Right? And yeah, you know, I mean, grew up it's in not like Canada. It's like he grew up in Canada.
Right. It was not like his dad was, you know, a pygmy Indian or something. You know?
Nah,
I mean, those facts are very mundane, boring facts. I don't think anybody would make them up.
He was part of the World League of American Football back in 1992 as a scout.
Awesome.
Look at that.
Guy loves some ball, as they say.
You got to look. Started with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
Is that that's CFL, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's not the World League of America.
No, but then after came the World League.
Okay.
And they used to be two Rough Riders, but the Ottawa franchise folded and came back as the Renegades, folded, came back as the Red Blacks, which they are currently.
Yeah. Were they also the other Rough Riders, Calgary?
Yeah. Saskatchewan.
Oh, Saskatchewan.
Calgary Stampede.
Oh, okay. By the way, Eddie Scazzeri, the king of Fakakta football, has all the answers for these things.
Edmonton Elks, BC Lions.
Wow.
Toronto Argonauts.
Pretty good.
Montreal Alouettes.
A lot of the guys, like this John Robinson guy, worked underneath Dimitroff with the Patriots.
Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of Patriot connection here.
I mean, it's just an incestuous business. I mean, there's just a lot. So, the guys who have come out of the front office of the Patriots,
yes,
there's an actual successful tree that exists.
It seems like it, yes.
The coaches, not so much. Yeah. But, you know, whether it's Nick Caserio or
John Robinson.
John Robinson or Dimitrov. You know, all these guys.
Scott Pioli.
Pioli was an interesting one, though. Because, I mean, he kind of had success there in Kansas City, but then he had that whole thing with Todd Haley.
Yes, that was a weird deal. That was two really headstrong guys.
Remember, I think there was like an accusation of Pioli bugging Haley's office. If you go back and look at that, I remember there being a thing, and like how Haley would have to put on a fan. Or he was paranoid enough that he would put on a fan to have conversations in his office.
Yeah, well, it that takes Todd all Haley. Types, man. Let me just tell you.
That Todd Haley, you want to talk about a football guy with an edge? That guy.
Well, I was around his dad, Dick Haley.
Yeah.
Who was part of the Jets front office when I was here. Great guy, man. We all loved Dick Haley. That guy was a great guy.
Yeah, Todd's got a different reputation.
Yes, he does. He does. He does. But, yeah, I mean, his dad was unbelievable. He was part of the Steelers in the 70s, I believe.
Yeah. It was a big deal when he went and he was... Todd Haley was the offensive coordinator for Ben after Bruce Arians left, or they kind of half fired Bruce Arians because they felt like Ben and Bruce Arians were too close, so they brought in Todd Haley like the ultimate a-hole.
So is that was Coach Cowher did that?
No, it was Tomlin.
Oh, it was Tomlin.
Yep, that was okay. Tomlin. So they were like, all right, you're too close to Arians. The offense isn't doing what it needs to do, so we're going to bring in this son of a bitch to set you straight.
Well, I think it was also probably that way because Tomlin felt like he wasn't running the team then.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what I would think. That's what I would speculate. If that happened that way, because you were there when that was.
I was,
down, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, I remember all that. I don't remember all the specifics about it. You lived through it. But I would think that the speculation would be that Tomlin was not controlling that part of the team.
Yeah.
So we got to break up these two guys. They're having too much fun together. It's too
buddy-buddy.
Too buddy-buddy. We got to get them out.
Which is interesting, having learned more about Bruce Arians since then. You wouldn't think that he would have been too buddy-buddy with Ben. You would have
I don't know. You know, he was younger then. But, you know, Bruce, as he got older, became a little bit more edgy when he was out in Arizona.
Yeah.
And then, of course, down in Tampa.
I remember when he did that year on CBS, we just let it fly. It was hilarious.
Yes.
He was calling games. He's like, look at this tight end here. He actually said... He's wide ass open on the TV broadcast, which was great. But bring in Todd Haley to coach the Jets. Why not? That'll send everybody for a loop, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
Todd Haley, Greg Williams, Rob Ryan. It's like, don't bring back Rex, but bring back Rob. Just bring all these crazy assistant coach personalities. Bob Wiley, right?
Yes.
Wink Martindale,
bring them all back.
Bring them all back. Bring them to the Jets.
That would be redoing the Ravens, right? Because they've all come through the Ravens, a lot of those crazy guys.
Yeah, a lot of them. Did Greg Williams come through the Ravens, though? I don't think so. No, Greg Williams was on there.
Browns,
yeah.
Lions.
Rams, right? Saints. Rams.
Guy gets around.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he sticks around in a building for like a couple of years and starts stabbing people in the back and then gets fired. Like, that's what he does.
I think Andrew is a doppelganger for Thomas Dimitrov.
Andrew?
Yeah.
Andrew who?
Out in the bullpen.
Oh, with Perloff?
Kaplan? Bogish?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Bogish, yes.
Yeah, you forget about Bogish, you know.
I don't forget about him.
No, you do.
Is he a doppelganger
to.
For him or no?
I wouldn't go quite. I could see a resemblance. I wouldn't go quite doppelganger.
All right.
I think Thomas Dimitrov, a little bit in better shape, a little bit better looking than Bogish. But there's a resemblance.
The big takeaway is that there's three Andrews here.
Yeah, that is true. I thought you were going to say Perloff at first. I was like, no. No way. I mean, Perloff looks
and
like
one a, over at the network, too.
Perloff looks like a tapeworm. You know, he doesn't look like Thomas Dimitrov.
Okay.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Hi, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Jerry's back. He's got another update. What's happening, Jerry?
We are brought to you by Hard Rock Bet. Download the Hard Rock Bet app and roll with us. And we're brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Morristown. What is happening is your Vikings are happening as they continue to steamroll their way to the playoffs. Last night, two games on Monday Night Football, including the Vikings and the Bears.
Second and goal from the one. Offset eye right behind Darnold. hand off Baker, stretch out to the right, encountered at the line of scrimmage, grinds his way for a touchdown! Cam Akers with his first rushing touchdown this year, and the Minnesota Vikings have a 26-6 lead.
And that's your guy Paul Allen on Vikings radio. They would win 30-12. Sam Darnold threw for 231, had a touchdown pass to Justin Jefferson. That was Cam Akers running one in, Aaron Jones as well. Here was Darnold. It wasn't perfect, but we did enough to win.
Felt like we didn't play exactly the way that we wanted to on offense tonight. Can be a lot better in a lot of ways, but we got the job done, and that's all that matters.
How about the fact Caleb Williams, if I read this right, hasn't thrown an interception in like six or seven straight games, and they haven't won any of them. That sound right?
Yeah, it does sound right, but they're just not generating enough offense. You know, he's still a little bit of a scattershot guy. Reminds me a little bit of when Josh Allen first got into the league. You could see the arm strength. You could see all the ability. You just got to harness all of that power and everything else, and whoever the next coach will be, whether it be Cliff Kingsbury or somebody else, we'll get the best out of him. He'll be so much better next year as opposed to this year. And same thing for Jaden Daniels. You know, Jaden Daniels is playing great. He's a great athlete, but you know, he'll have to refine his quarterbacking skills as he gets older. He can do it. You can see it, but it just needs to be a little bit more consistent.
He got sacked a ton this past week, Jaden Daniels. I think maybe eight times. It was a lot. And in the beginning of the year, wasn't getting sacked at all.
Coaches don't like sacks. Of course, but I'd much rather have a sack than a turnover. You know what I'm saying?
But,
talk about the level of like, okay, if you don't see it, you don't feel it, just eat it.
Eat it.
Don't throw it.
Sacked. Here was Williams on what it feels like for that to happen in the NFL.
Say you get in three car accidents and, you know, a month, you're going to feel it. And that's what a hit is in football. Y'all didn't know. A football and getting hit. Especially when you can't deliver a hit to somebody, as in like running the ball, you take those over amount of time, and you know it's it builds up.
Yeah. So.
And he's a young guy. Think if you're Aaron Rodgers, how you feel?
Not great.
Aaron Rodgers ran for over 40 yards this year.
45.
This past week. Yeah,
that's exactly right. The Bears now 4-10 on the season. Meantime, the Falcons beat the Raiders in an ugly game, 15-9. Vegas turned the ball over three times, had a punt block, gave up a safety. Desmond Ridder against his former team, well, not so good as he would say.
We just never able to find a rhythm again there, obviously, until late in the game. By then, it's too little too late, but we just got to find a way to get in rhythm and get in rhythm fast.
This is said coach.
Could you fight that voice? Desmond Ridder.
Yeah, the voice here, probably.
That's a tough one. The reason I brought it up, when I first heard it, I was like, I'm fighting that voice. And then as it went on, I was like, I don't think I'm fighting that voice. Yeah. I got to say no, not fighting that voice. Interesting. I didn't expect him to sound like that.
Here's Antonio Pierce as his quarterback. Was all right.
Personal game for him, but I thought it gave us a chance. I mean, we're down there inside the 40-yard line, plus 40, to give our team one more chance, one more opportunity. And he fought. Proud of his effort and the way he competed.
But we lost, and we're 2-12 and still alive for that number one pick overall in the draft. Week 16 begins Thursday, Broncos and Chargers, Giants, Falcons on Sunday. Brian Daboll, when looking at the film, because who knows, maybe Tim Boyle will be the quarterback again this week. How did he do in his limited time?
You know, he made some nice throws. He was decisive with the football. He was ready to go. He was prepared. He's worked, extremely hard since he's been here. He made the most of his opportunity, the chance he got to be in there.
Looks like we'll find out more Wednesday or Thursday when we know more on Tommy DeVito and on Drew Locke. Those are the three quarterbacks.
Really,
right
the
now
one
in
the
play.
One that I worry about right now is Patrick Mahomes and whether or not
high ankle sprain.
Yeah, and whether or not he's playing this Thursday. And you got to remember, they're playing like
Saturday, Wednesday.
Yeah,
Thursday, Saturday, Wednesday.
No, Saturday, Broncos, Wednesday. Chargers, Thursday.
Broncos, Chargers, Thursday.
Chiefs are Saturday.
Then Chiefs are Saturday, then Wednesday.
First base.
Okay. The question is are they going to play him in this game on Saturday? Because they have a game on Christmas at Pittsburgh, right? The game's at Pittsburgh.
It is at Pittsburgh.
Yep. Don't know. I thought a high ankle sprain was the worst type of sprain you can have.
Remember, he played through it.
He won the Super Bowl with it.
Yeah. But it is.
Jerry,
you're right. It is the worst ankle sprain you can have, and sometimes it actually involves like a fracture, and there's a surgery that can happen. But he played through it and played great, but we'll see. Now, don't forget Carson Wentz, the backup there Kansas City.
The Lions lost David Montgomery. Here is Dan Campbell explaining what happened.
He's going to require surgery that'll put him out for the rest of the year, you know, and he had gotten it at some point yesterday in that game. I mean, David's so tough, man. You know, he continued to play through and then got it checked out today and, you know, and realized that's what it was. And
not good. And also their defensive tackle, Lee McNeil, out for the rest of the season with a torn ACL.
That is huge. That's a huge loss for them.
Yep, not good. The hits just keep on coming. North Carolina head coach Bill Belichick did his weekly segment with Pat McAfee. So a few things here from this yesterday. So what is this time as a college coach like, especially as he is kind of jumping right in?
It's very similar to what we went through with the post-draft process and right at the beginning of the free agent process, all combined into one with the transfer portal. And then you still have a little bit of, you know, some leftover players from high school that are uncommitted or, you know, that are maybe weren't recruited, but for some reason now their name has surfaced.
No, I don't work in college football like you guys. I did not realize the transfer portal overlaps this bowl season.
It ruins the bowl season. Like, you had the backup quarterback for Penn State
leaving
before they play their game. Now, some I saw where some players are in the transfer portal, but they're staying with their teams through the college playoff.
Huh.
And Marshall had to withdraw from their bowl game against Army because half their players followed their coach.
Wow. Right, to Southern Miss.
Yeah, and so they had to bail on, and they would give it to La Tech.
What a joke.
It is. It's just that, and that's why I was telling, you know, Gio in regards to Belichick, he had to make a decision relatively quickly, or North Carolina had to meet his demands relatively quickly.
Yeah, because they got to get moving on stuff.
Exactly.
Here he is talking about team building at this point.
You know, it's exciting to put together a team, you know, offensive line, quarterbacks. We've got a lot of guys think now we're really, you know, looking to add some skill players to the roster with.
And then in terms of what McAfee's, you know, asks them then, you know, obviously this is different. You got to go sit in living rooms, talk to parents, talk to agents. What is recruiting like?
We're selling the program, but quite honestly, Pat, a lot of players and agents are coming to us saying, we want to be part of the program. Is there a spot for us? Would you take this player, that player, and so forth? And so a lot of the agents are also representing players in the transfer portal that we've dealt with in the National Football League.
So very busy.
That's
time
crazy. It's just nuts what's going on.
It's pro football.
Yes, and that's why Bill Belichick thinks he can thrive. Have you gone through that entire interview yet?
Of the Belichick?
Yeah.
No, I'm only through the first 6 minutes.
I'm just really curious to hear if he asks him about that Jet report, about him reaching out to the Jets.
I will, like I said, I'm 6 minutes in.
Now, I didn't see anything yesterday about that. You would think that if he commented on it, it would have been out there.
I think McAfee probably asked him. He's usually pretty good about that. They don't just glance over stuff. At least ask him and maybe not have a follow-up, but he'll ask. Hopefully I'll have that for you next hour. I'll get right to it when I get out. Nets Cavaliers last night in Brooklyn. Kenny Atkinson was back. Jared Allen was back. Caris LeVert was back. And the Cavs just drilled Brooklyn.
Mitchell the other way. Right wing pull up three. It's good. Two in a row for Donovan Mitchell. Timeout Nets.
For to no avail. They got
swag nut Nets.
Well, last night, you're right. 130 to 101, and I don't even think it was that close. Here was Atkinson postgame. He was really taken aback by his team because one of the reporters says to him, you know, at shoot around, the theme was we want to go out here for Kenny tonight and take down the Nets for what they did to him and how he was, you know, let go.
It's kind of cool. I did feel it. Like you know, and you know, a bunch of players, you know, you had Jared and Karras, and we had a bunch of assistant coaches who were here. Listen, it's just human nature. You know, a place you've been, you want to kind of show them that you're good, and you know, you still got it.
So I would say so. 23-7 through 27 games, the Cavaliers. They had seven guys in double figures last night.
It's a great job by him, and you know, you never know where you're next. You know, your next meal's coming from your next paycheck, and he found the right spot, man.
Yeah, he did. Evan Mobley, 7 of 9 for 21 points to lead the way. The Nets now 10-16 on the season, and we know about them getting rid of Dennis Schroeder. We'll see who will follow, because I can't imagine they want to win many games. Tonight, the Thunder play the Bucks in Las Vegas for the Cup Championship, and that's it for the NBA. This is a standalone game for this this big event. NHL tonight, the Rangers are in Nashville against the Predators. You've got the Devils and the Blues in St. Louis. The Islanders on the road at Carolina. And you've got two local college basketball games of note with St. John's home for DePaul. And Seton Hall visits Villanova.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. So yesterday, I saw a trailer for something that I'm interested in watching. And I wonder if you're interested in watching it, too. It might be up your alley. Maybe it's not. I don't know.
Okay.
But it's an E60 about you and Gunner revisiting the story that was told many years ago by Jeremy Schapp. Now, you know, Frank DeFord did one for Real Sports. Jeremy Schapp did one for ESPN in the beginning of the journey with Gunner and CF, and he wanted to revisit it. And if you've paid any attention through this show or elsewhere, the Boomer Esiason Foundation, you know the advancements and the drug Trikafta, which has unlocked the future for many people, including Gunner, and that's why he himself now has two children. So that's where we're at, and it looks awesome. I didn't know you were doing it.
Yeah, well, it's really Gunner. It's Gunner's story.
Yeah.
Now, right. And it should be Gunner's story, and he's the one that has lived with CF. And you know, I obviously had all the platforms that I was able to exploit to put a face and a name to it, but there were so many parents that have gone before us, so many families that have gone before us that have lost people to CF that, you know, we never want to overshadow the sacrifices that those families made, because they're the ones that built the fundraising mechanisms to be able to support companies like Vertex that come up with a drug like Trikafta. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Jeremy did this story on Gunner. He, I guess, not got nominated for an Emmy because the story was so powerful when Gunner was in high school. And Jeremy lives up in New Canaan. Gunner's in New Canaan. And Jeremy just thinks the world of Gunner, and he knows his story personally because he did that story initially. So they wanted to really kind of go back and just see what has happened since that last story that Jeremy did on Gunner.
Yeah.
And now where Gunner is today is nothing short of a miracle. And I've often told you that. And the people that are close to us all know that. But, you know, Jeremy is just wants to put it out there once again, just to show now exactly all the things that, you know, our foundation has done along with the National Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to give these kids a new lease on life. Not all of them. It covers about 90% of the CF population. There's still about 10% of the population that is not affected by this drug. And I know that Vertex is working very hard to include those other 10 people. But, you know, Gunner's story is remarkable, and he's a remarkable young man, and, you know, never want to take any of it for granted. And certainly being able to see him now as a father himself is nothing short of literally a miracle.
Yeah, I mean, this is the dream for all fundraising efforts when it comes to diseases and issues, is to raise that money, direct it to the right place, to come up with as close to a cure as you could get. I mean, it's that word is... But just to, I mean, to make advancements and make people's lives better and allow people to live longer. And, you know, you see a lot of that stuff this time of year in the holidays, and you'll see, I know ESPN does a lot of things with, you know, Jim Valvano and Stuart Scott and some of the guys that they had lost to cancer. Well, this story is...
Like, yeah, it's kind of like the opposite.
The opposite.
I mean, it is. And the interesting thing about this story is that my grandson Casper was born on Christmas Eve.
Right, yeah.
And I don't know how they're tying... Obviously, Casper's going to be a big part of this because he needs to be.
Well, this they're debuting this on Christmas Eve.
Right, well, yeah, his birthday. And it is really the Christmas miracle. It truly is. And it's a remarkable story of resilience, overcoming adversity, being driven, meeting the right person in Gunner's personal life that unlocked who he was as a man. And now he is a father of two. He's working. He's traveling. The everything that he's gone through is everything that I could have wished for, that we could have wished for him. And yeah, it's going to be a remarkable story. And I'm happy that they reached out to Gunner, and that Gunner, you know, once again is using his platform now to shine a light on something that has been, you know, so important for all of us.
Yeah, I think sort of something that hit me the last time I saw Gunner was like, at least in me knowing him and working for you, my relationship with him has been, when I see him, that's Gunner.
as opposed to that's Gunner, the sick kid. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just Gunner. Like, oh, Gunner's here. You know, and it's not like, oh, Gunner's here. I wonder, you know, dude, I better not sneeze or something like, you know what I'm saying? Yep. Like, I've known Gunner as Gunner, a peer and a friend and your son. And I mean, I think that's the biggest testament to what this has done.
Yeah, you know, he was an innocent victim in all of this, and then he was the poster child for it in a world in which, you know, you got to be really careful about that. And he didn't seem to be affected by it in any way, shape, or form negatively. As a matter of fact, I would think that the memories that we have collected over the years, due in large part to his illness, have been very powerful. Now he's trying to recreate that for him and his children.
Yes,
which is really amazing. I mean, just watching him as a dad and watching Darcy as his wife as a mom is really quite enjoyable, you know, and it's funny to watch it.
Sure.
Never thinking that it would have ever have happened, although I always felt like it was going to happen. And then when it did happen, that's the miracle part of it. So, yeah, and he's living an unbelievable life right now. He's working full time. He actually does still work for our foundation in terms of setting a strategy of what we want to do now because he knows exactly what CF patients need and know how to deliver. He knows how to deliver. He's gotten more CF people involved in our foundation than ever before. From the scholarships to the IVF grants, to the transplant grants, to all the different things that we're doing within the community now are directly because of where he is setting our strategy as a foundation.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the other amazing thing that has gone on here, and I'm sure they're detailed. Have you seen the E60 yet? Have they shown it to
I've
you?
I haven't seen the whole thing. Okay. I've just seen the excerpts like everybody else.
Right, so, but the what they've done now, and we've talked about this, and how Gunner was able to have a family with Darcy through IVF and some of the things that he had to go through that we joked around about, but now it's gone from survival to family building.
Yes.
I mean, and with these IVF grants, so that's just another layer of this amazing story.
I think we have like six BEF babies now.
Wow.
And maybe about five or six on the way still now coming. So it's really, it's amazing.
And, you know, for G was saying that he really only knows Gunner as the healthy Gunner. Yeah. But for Al and I, with all the years, there were a lot of mornings where it was like, you know, Gunner's not doing great, especially when it's up at BC.
Yeah, you guys were there and pretty much from...
But you carried on, and you would never know. But, like, we could tell, you know, off the air. And there were a lot of mornings that it was like, oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah. When he was in college, it was rough. And when he got out of college, it was really rough.
Mm-hmm.
And then around 2018, that's when it changed. And he had met Darcy right before that, and that really changed him. And then the drug, I'll never forget when he was first on that drug. And, man, we were playing hockey, and normally he would take a 30-second shift. And this one night, he's out on the ice for like a minute and a half, and the guys on the bench are like, what the hell's going on with Gunner? He's eating up all our ice time.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, this is great. This is awesome.
I remember you telling me about that, like the next day or whatever it was, if it was over the weekend on Monday. I remember you saying that, like, you were cautiously optimistic about it, but you were like, this thing, that this trial and what we're working on.
He was on the drug trial, which we didn't know whether or not he had the drug or the placebo. And I could tell literally that night. And then he wanted to have pizza afterwards and drink beer.
Yeah.
Which is something that he would not, he loves pizza, but he ate half a pizza.
Right.
So I could tell that the drug that he was taking in pill form changed the dynamics of his body internally. And he all of a sudden became this different person. And if you talk to him now and see him today, I mean, like the amount of energy and everything that he has compared to when he came out of college, it's like a completely different person.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I'm happy to have not seen the sick Gunner, but like I said, like I've played multiple rounds of golf with him. I've seen him chase Casper around. Like I played softball with him. Like,
yes.
Like all of these things that he's just doing with the rest of us.
We played softball in that game over in Brooklyn, and that's where he made that error. You remember? And I was yelling at him.
Yeah.
And everybody on the team, and, you know, got Matt Martin, my son-in-law, out in center field.
Yeah.
And everybody's laughing because I'm yelling at him.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next play, he gets the ball hit to him, he drops it, and you know I'm going to yell at him, but then he fires it home to get the guy out at home.
Yeah, and he needed that more than anybody in the world did he need that.
Yes, exactly.
He needed to gun that guy down at home. Boy, I mean, that was important for him. It was important for all of us. Like, at that point, we didn't want to see anymore.
And there was that game when was me and you and Al and Gunner and Jerry on the bench.
On the bench, yeah. Yeah, and I remember when I was
B&G
out there.
B&G All-Stars.
Yeah, I've told the story many times, but I'll tell it again. Is I made an error out in the field, and then you benched me, and Gunner was already on the bench. And I get to the dugout, and I sit on the bench, and I'm just looking forward, and Gunner goes, I know exactly where you're at right now. It'll be all right.
Hey, man, I'm all about winning, man. He knows that.
Yeah, of course.
He knows it.
Yep, of course. We all know.